There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Hey, y'all. A couple hours of hanging out. It's a good thing. Lots to do on today's show. The phone and text hotline, 343-0106. The fantastic website, fmtalk1065.com, where you can, of course, stream the station. You can check out podcasts galore. That was one of the suggested names for a new Bond Ingenue, podcast galore. I don't know if it's working or not. It was on the list, a working list somebody didn't have out there. And also, while you're there, online opinion poll questions, show schedules, pictures of Bill Finch, if you want to get yourself ready for this weekend and more gardening talk this time of year. Look at the numbers on that show, and they're through the roof because we're all not only thinking about yard stuff, thinking about planting the vegetable garden, all that good stuff. So that's on the website. Our fantastic and fabulous Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. And the administrator extraordinaire, our friend Leanna. Of course, we have an Instagram page she has brought back to life. It looks fantastic. And I'm goofing around on the Twitter page at FMTalk1065. So check us out there. All right. Let's start. I want to start off here with the 6 versus 3 feet thing here. Okay, and we're going to talk some Montgomery and what was passed yesterday, and I've got some border stories coming up as well. But the story here, Associated Press said students can safely sit just 3 feet apart in the classroom as long as they wear masks, but should be kept the usual 6 feet away from one another at sporting events, assemblies, lunch, and choir practice. That, according to new direction from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, it said today it's relaxing. Relax, like relax fit. COVID-19 guidelines. Like, you got the skinny jeans fit. I've never been game for that. These are the relaxed fit COVID-19 guidelines. So the revised recommendations represent a turn away from the 6-foot standard that has sharply limited how many students some schools can accommodate. Now, mind you, it's not just schools, though, right? This exists in the restaurants, and if you're going to whatever event, you got to be 6 feet. And okay. It's a CDC, now, in clarity here, which has not been done out there, but the CDC said 6 feet should still be maintained in common areas. But they're saying in the classroom, but aren't we told that the kids, they don't carry nearly as much as the adults do for COVID? But my worry here, be it 6 feet, be it 3 feet, do me a favor. If you're pulling up somewhere to go get lunch, or you're parking today somewhere, look at how people park. And yeah, you know, this is like one of my peccadilloes here, parking lines and park. Look how people park. If they can't gauge parking their car, can they gauge 6 feet versus 3 feet? I mean, honestly, right now, maybe we bring a tape measure in here and you can guess distances in the studio and we'll put it up and people can 3 feet versus 6 feet versus 4.5. If you're CDC, and you're just trying to continue. Why do you even start with the 3 feet now? I mean, this is like the no mask and then you need mask stuff, right? So So CDC says, well, in some cases, when the kids are in the classroom, they can be separated by 3 feet. Even though in their pictures here over at the Associated Press, they show the kids and their the plexiglass things around the desk as well. So they're inside the plexiglass, but now instead of being 6 feet, they have a mask on, there's plexiglass, but now they can be 3 feet apart. Now, let me say something on the student side of this. Saw it during high school football this year. So my oldest, going to high school football games, and I watch the high school football games for my alma mater where my children go to school. I watched the games, and I think they were down to, it came up to maybe 50% capacity, or for some reason I thought it was even lower than that for the high school football games. And obviously the same for college. They had restrictions as well. But yeah, I saw it mostly at high school games because, well, kids are going to be kids. And so you say, okay, normally there could be 500. Now there's only going to be 250. With this idea that everybody was going to space themselves out at 6 feet. Through this, did you watch it? Did you go to a game or did you watch it on TV this fall? What did everybody do? They did what kids do. They go cluster up. Cluster up and goof off. It's what going to, if you weren't on the field, that's what a high school football game was about, right? Clustering up and goofing off. So they, and there wasn't some huge outbreak from that. But in the classroom, it was 6 feet. Now it's 3 feet. But then when they go back out to, now they're going to say they're going to let them be 3 feet in the classroom. But when they go out to the common area, they're in the hallway. I mean, how about when they're walking to their lockers, CDC? Just a question. How can you, I mean, if you're maintaining six or now with the new guidance, the relaxed fit, the husky fit, as friend says here, on the husky fit of the new CDC guidelines, that you can be 3 feet down the classroom, 6 feet everywhere else. Do you really think that the kids aren't getting within 3 feet of each other or within 6 feet of each other now when they're going to lockers, walking down the hallway, going back past their next class, making faces at their friends that are still in that room because the class lasted longer? You think that's not happening? So, by the way, CDC guidance. Now, so it's 3 versus 6, except when it's 6. You got all that? Yeah, I don't either. Just wanted to get that confusion in the way as we got started with Midday Mobile. All right, I am glad y'all are here. Got lots to do today. Love to talk to you. 343-0106. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:17, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. Y'all say hello to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. And Larry, inventory is always a story, and you're looking for inventory.
Absolutely. You know, we still have a great mix of inventory, but we're about 50 units off where we like to be. So we'd love to buy some vehicles and nothing like buying local trade-ins. Maybe somebody's got something they want to sell or they just don't feel like they're getting enough money for it as a trade-in. So we'll give them a fair figure.
I tell you what, yeah, it's what you did for my parents, too. Worked with them on a mid-size SUV that they were looking to sell, and it went very quickly, very easily, y'all. The process, just from my perspective, is fantastic from LCM.
Absolutely. Like I said, we'll buy cars, trucks, SUVs, we'll buy boats, we'll buy motorcycles. So, you know, we don't buy junk. We want reasonably nice vehicles, and like I said, we love local one owners.
All right. Tell folks how to find you.
Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Make a like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
All right, Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. All right, 1218, phone number, text sign, together, mash together. We'll call them the hotline at 343-0106, 343-0106. Previously scheduled guests to talk about all the stuff they passed down the legislature not happening today. That's okay, though. It's okay, because I could run through these things with you, and we'll do that, and then we'll get those members of the legislature on next week. All right, but I mentioned to Jeff as we wrapped up his show, I want to talk about this FCC robocall fine. So the story from our news partners at WKRG says the FCC, that is the Federal Communications Commission, in the radio world, those are the police for us. FCC issued a $255 million fine to Texas telemarketers, plural here, for illegally spoofing approximately 1 billion robocalls. to sell short-term health insurance plans. Now, let me point out, $1 billion, way less than the amount of dollars spent in the latest spending plan coming out of Washington, the $1.9 trillion. But this is still a bunch. It's not Washington bunch like trillions, but it's, for a guy like me, a billion anything's a lot. Okay. FCC says that those calls falsely claim to offer health insurance plans from companies including Aetna and United Group or United Health Group. Two men reportedly involved in the scheme, John C. Spiller and Jacob A. Mears, transmitted the 1 billion robocalls in fewer than 5 months during 2019. The FCC noted in an announcement of the fine, said beginning in 2018, there was an increase in consumer complaints about robocall traffic related to health insurance and other healthcare products, with approximately 23.6 million health insurance robocalls crossing the network of the four largest wireless carriers every day. All right, so a couple thoughts here. By the way, I think it was the Attorney General out of Missouri that brought the initial suit here, but it ended up they were doing this all across the country. And they point out, too, in the story, the practice of spoofing, like, so that's when it's not that number. You know, you get the call, it says it's from, either it doesn't say where it's from, or it has a number. Have you had a number? I've had a number that's one or two digits off my cell, call mine. And I've heard people that have had their own number call them, which you pick up because you're like, what the heck is going on? Now, point out that if these people, and they say, well, the practice of spoofing is illegal under the Truth in Caller ID Act. All right. If you got these guys in Texas, you can go after them there, right? Where do the majority of these calls come out? They come out of other countries. This is almost like a discussion of what the Democrats are pushing on Second Amendment limitations in Washington. They, in these few cases here where you get these bad players inside the United States, FCC can go after them, they can fine them, you can make arrests, you can do all these things. But the majority of this comes from out of the country. So you go, oh, well, we got a law. Spoofing's illegal. Well, that means that you and I and anybody else that's a law-abiding citizen wouldn't spoof our phone number. But if you're a bad player here, right, you're a criminal, a fraudster, what do you care? You're already trying to get, if the person's trying to get a spoof number to get your phone to steal your Social Security number or get into your bank account or something, what do they care about? Well, it's the Truth in Caller ID Act. Like there's somebody at some Russian phone bank out there going, you know, Vladimir, dude, I would do that call and try to get Mrs. Smith to give me all her money here. But look, they got this Truth in Caller ID Act. We can't do it. At least they got somebody, but they only get the people here in the States, which doesn't amount for the majority of things, which is scary because these people, these two dirtbags, were responsible for a billion robocalls. What do you think, like, as they come up with a punishment for these guys, would it be nice to have, like, a creative judge who would say, here's what's going to happen. For the rest of their lives, any phone number that they have, cell phone, whatever, they got them a Bentley. No, I don't mean the car. I mean like a burner phone or a Governor Bentley. They got them a Bentley. Whatever. Those numbers will be posted so everybody can call them all day long. All day long and long and long. You can have call after call after call after call after call come in. You can't. I mean, you're already stressed out at work and your phone's just ringing and ringing and ringing. And it's nobody that's actually calling for you. Would that be appropriate? Like you still find them, obviously, the money here, try to make good, maybe even give them jail time, you know, you would think. But when they get out, their phone numbers stay posted so they can get constant harassment for the rest of their existence on planet Earth. I think it's fair. All right. Oh, and I said the gun thing. So this goes back to I've talked about this since before the election. Right, the Biden gun plan and the push coming out of the Democrats in Congress on this. Once again, we're talking about laws that pertain to law-abiding citizens. It's a run here. It's the same old song and dance. These ideas that are going to be thrown in here that are going to just affect people that are not the people that day in and day out, not that some of them, there's some percentage, but they are not even close to being the problem with gun violence in our country. But that's where they go after. Just like this Truth and Color ID Act. Well, okay, keep people in the United States who don't want to break the law from doing it. But the person calling from Russia, the person calling from Uzbekistan or something like that to try to scam you, they don't care. They don't care. They're already trying to scam you. They're already trying to defraud you. Why would they let a simple thing like, oh, the United States has a Truth and Color ID Act? They don't care. Same thing is true. It is analogous to the situation we find ourselves in, again, with these ideas of these are things that are going to be done to reduce gun violence. Now, if you're somebody out there that doesn't want to reduce gun violence, then I don't know. I can't have much of a discussion with you. So I think the rest of us, all the rest of us are going to go over here and talk that would like to reduce gun violence. All right. So now that we got this, we'll leave those folks over there. They're going to do their thing. They don't care. Those of us that would like to see a reduction in gun violence will look at this logically. Some of us won't. And that's what's happening. We can go back and look at things that have been done, right? And limitations that have been put in on firearms. And correlate that with the numbers of violent firearm deaths, injuries, all that. It has not worked. It has not worked. But still, the Democrats roll back out the same ideas here that they're gonna fix this. They're gonna take the emotional feeling that I think all of us over here that are the fair-minded, decent people are gonna say, I want to reduce gun violence. And then they're gonna offer ideas that have been proven not to work. And they're gonna roll that out like, look what we're doing for the American people. Let me argue something here. I think it's been a couple years ago I had this discussion on the morning show back then, and it was a discussion on the air, and then I got an email, a return email back and forth. But the question was, it was about Chicago, and I think Dalton and I had been talking about the number of gun deaths in Chicago, right? And I said, look at Chicago. Look at the gun laws in Chicago. Look how absolutely strict they are. They are some of the tightest in the nation. But still, you have all this gun violence going on in Chicago. And I said, so what's the deal? And somebody said, well, people, and there's stories, this is true, that people are bringing guns into Chicago. They're buying them elsewhere legally, okay, and bringing those guns in. Now, sometimes they're bringing stolen guns in. We've talked to law enforcement here. A lot of times the gun thefts that were going on here, those guns were being found in places like Chicago. They're stealing them down here and taking them up there. But also, there are legally purchased guns that made their way into the system in Chicago as well that have been picked up. So, Chicago has a tight gun laws. The market reacts and brings guns into Chicago. But those places that have so many guns that don't have the gun laws that Chicago has, the place where they go get the guns, let's even say stolen, place like Alabama, got the guns. They get the guns. Why is the gun violence rate so much higher in Chicago than it is? Let's say you drove outside of Chicago. I don't know. Wherever the first place that's gun-friendly is to buy some guns to take into Chicago to arm murderers in Chicago. Why aren't those places? Because they obviously have, if we're looking at osmosis, right, that the heat is traveling. So there's less heat in Chicago for guns. There's more heat outside. So the heat travels to the place, right? The osmosis works that way. And so shouldn't, by the logic, if guns are the problem, if guns are the absolute problem, then why wouldn't the place that the guns are purchased that has more guns in Chicago than they don't have the guns, why wouldn't crime be, why wouldn't the murder rate be twice Chicago's in those places? But it's not. There's laws, and then there's the reality of life. And Chicago has laws telling people can't have guns. The guns find their way in there, and the violence comes with it. So, once again, if it is all about the guns, Why wouldn't the places that the people are buying guns legally or stealing them to bring into Chicago have higher murder rates in Chicago? It's not the guns, is it? Oh, shoot, my phone. There's another robocall. We'll be right back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, another product recall needs to happen out there. There are often these product recalls out there, and I don't think anybody else has been talking about this, so I'll be the first here. I like to plant the flag on serious issues affecting Americans. So, been back in my office where all things go to stay, or it's like the drop-off room here at Bigler Broadcasting. So, back in my office, we had, imagine this, lately we've had a lot of electronic parts coming and going here, for overnighted, and then this is not right, and you send it back, and this. So, packed in, we're going to get to what happened in Montgomery, hold on. But packed in these packages is the bubble wrap, right? Because these are very delicate electronic breakers and different pieces and fuses. And, okay, so they come packed in bubble wrap. So, I go, possibly yesterday as a stress reliever, to go pop some of those bubbles, right? You get bubble, come on. You know what? You pop the bubbles in the bubble wrap and it feels so good. This must be an environmental thing here they're doing, maybe to get people to recycle bubble wrap, because you can't pop them now. They're, it looks like the same bubbles, y'all, but they have a channel into another bubble, you know, it's networked. So, when you go to squeeze the bubble, waiting for that satisfying of the bubble, you don't get it. It moves the air into several other bubbles. And you sit there and you sit. So, I mean, if we're looking at a product recall and we're looking at stress that Americans are under, how many news stories start off with, you know, Americans under more stress than ever? Yada, 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 fill in the story. How about this? Americans under more stress because they can't pop the bubbles that they get with their packaging. So I would like to see a full product recall on that. All right. Yesterday, Montgomery, they were passing machines in the House. I mean, they were busy. One of the bills, and I think we discussed this some in the past, and hopefully it looks like maybe Monday, Attorney General Steve Marshall will join us to talk more about this. But the Alabama House of Representatives yesterday passed a bill that would end curbside voting in the state of Alabama. Do you understand curbside voting? Which, by the way, Leanna Dalton, I have this idea. I wrote some notes on the back of an envelope. We got to get somebody who can sing. You know, remember Jason Mraz? Remember Curbside Prophet? Remember that guy? That was his hit. I know he did some things afterwards, but that was like his big thing. All right. That guy, if we could get curbside voting redone as, to the sound of Curbside Prophet, just... I think it would be cool. I think we could work that up. Maybe if anybody out there in the audience, you can sing, you can hold a tune, and you sound like Jason Mraz, we could use you, okay? All right. So, curbside voting, which is exists in some states, never was... The law in Alabama, the way they said it, didn't allow for curbside voting, even though there wasn't a specific piece of legislation saying you couldn't do it. So that's what they're working on. HB 285, sponsored by Representative Wes Allen out of Troy, Republican out of Troy, is a companion bill to SB 235, the Senate bill, given a favorable report by the Senate Government Affairs Committee 2 weeks ago. SB 235, sponsored by Senator Dan Roberts, Republican out of Mountain Brook. Right. Can't call it Mountain Brook. Another lifetime. I dated a young lady from there, and I went to her house, and being some kid from Mobile, I said, oh, this your neighborhood's nice here in Mountain Brook. And they went, oh, wait. It's Mountain Brook. I said, yeah, I said Mountain Brook. They said, no, it's Mountain Brook. Emphasis on the same. Okay. So they bring this bill because Alabama law does not currently provide for curbside voting. However, the practice is not explicitly barred. This past year, the unclarity led to multiple rounds of litigation when the Secretary of State, John Merrill, and Attorney General Steve Marshall deemed the practice illegal while activists pushed to have curbside voting instituted at the last minute in certain counties. Marshall had said before the November election, Alabama law does not and has never provided for curbside voting. SB 235 would definitively end the debate on the matter for future election cycles. So, yesterday the House passed the companion bill HB 285 as amended in a party line 74-25 vote. Representative Rod Scott, Democrat out of Fairfield, abstained. Allen was not able to attend due to testing positive for COVID-19. So Representative Matt Simpson of Daphne. Hey, Matt, if you're out there listening, carried the bill on Thursday, which was the 16th day of the 2021 regular session. So the thing about, and Democrats during the debate, it says here in the story, argued that a ban on curbside voting could impede Alabamians with disabilities from participating in elections. Simpson rebutted that polling places are required to be ADA compliant and that absentee voting is also an option. It's a tough, this is one of these that you can see how it's abused. But if I was a Democrat or if I was on the other side, you can make it, if you get somebody who does not pay attention closely to this, I can make you seem like a real jerk for banning curbside voting. You're going to say, wait a second, somebody who has a disability, you know, who can't make it through the parking lot or whatever, they could pull up and vote. And you're saying that that's not okay. And that's what they are doing. But that is not being honest on the Democrat side about the fact that they're ADA compliant buildings. They're made for people to be able to get in there. If the curbside voting, if banning curbside voting specifically in Alabama is keeping Alabamians from voting, I'm not saying it's not their favorite way or most convenient way. There's nothing in the founding with our right of representation, which we interpret through the vote, right? We have a right of representation. How do you get representation? You vote for your representatives. Okay. That says it's got to be our favorite way to do it. Now, if you put up, like in the old days, poll taxes or poll tests or all that and try to keep people out based on that, different thing. But I can just sit here and say, the way I would like it to be, I would like to have it delivered. Can I have my ballot delivered? Can I do like a Uber ballots? And you know, there's a doorbell rings. There's Scott. Scott's a sophomore at South working his way through school. Brings me my ballot. I fill it out and send it back. I would like that. That would be better. I would like Uber. Well, you don't get that. It's not how you would want it. Now, if the only way somebody could vote would be curbside, then you might have an argument. So the Democrats opposing it weren't telling the rest of that story. Although I could see the danger, and for the Republicans, you can be demagogued for that until people understand the rest of the story. And that's kind of what we're here for. All right. So many texts coming in here. I got to. Ben says the dang environmentalists have busted your bubble bursting. Can't have nothing these days. I can't have nothing nice, Ben. So by the way, the recycling thing, I'm a recycling kind of guy. Recycling means what? Using things again. Well, I'm repurposing. I do lots of repurposing. And it goes from making sure that items aren't damaged in transport to becoming a satisfying recreation and stress dropper. Eddie says it's got to be an attempt by the CCP to create confusion and chaos in the United States, this bubble wrap thing. Eddie, I think you may be onto something absolutely there with the bubble wrap. But so we got the curbside voting. So that was one thing that brought a lot of attention yesterday. Also, this anti-riot bill. And we've talked about it as it went through. Here's the latest. So the anti-rioting bill, and this is from Yellowhammer News. I think Sean Ross did this. Anti-rioting bill passed by Alabama House over Democrats' opposition. Alabama House on Thursday afternoon passed HB 445 as substituted and amended in committee. This is the anti-rioting bill sponsored by Representative Alan Treadway. You've heard him on with Jeff. That would create new crimes and penalties for individuals who incite or participate in riots. The incite thing is interesting, too, because remember the discussions we had back during the summer with folks from law enforcement? They said, you know, sometimes these groups come in and there's just a few people that come into a city, incite a riot, and then they kind of disappear and they're off to their next mission. But this would go after them as well. I'll tell you more about what they passed in the Alabama House yesterday when we return. Plus, we'll talk about what's going on Monday. If you've not got your vaccine, the eligibility has moved younger as of Monday, and you got a great event and a great chance to get a vaccine. We'll talk to Dr. Scott Chavers about that next.
767-6550.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Friday-style Midday Mobile, streaming online at fmtalk1065.com. And every Tuesday, Dr. Scott Chavers from the Mobile County Health Department joins us. We talk about vaccines, we talk about COVID, we talk about your questions, get those answered. And we mentioned on Tuesday that as of Monday, new eligibility for getting the vaccine for COVID was happening and a big event with the Mobile County Health Department. And to remind us of that, Dr. Scott Chavers, hey, man.
Hey, Sean, thanks for having me in on a non-Tuesday. This is great.
Yeah, man, so like laid back, we're all in a casual Friday edition of the show, loosen your ties, whatever. Enjoy the show on a Friday, but also the reminder here that, yeah, that there's a big change on who's eligible to get the vaccine coming up Monday.
Absolutely. So as of Monday, individuals 55 years of age and older, regardless of health conditions, are now eligible for vaccination. So we've seen that decrease in the age group. Probably, to me, the most important change, and this is the one I've been waiting to see implemented, is individuals that are 18 to 64 with high-risk medical conditions, and we talked about these on Tuesday, but underlying heart issues, any kind of immunological issues, cancer, smoking, obesity. There's a long list here of underlying conditions, as well as anything that your physician may deem where you now need this vaccine. All of these individuals now become eligible. So 18 to 64 with underlying health conditions for the Moderna vaccine, it is 16 to 54 for the Pfizer vaccine, and that's because of the way they were studied. So exciting day coming Monday. It more than doubles the number of individuals that are eligible for vaccination. And so in order to meet this expanded eligibility, Mobile County Health Department is going to do a mega vaccine clinic at Mobile, Alabama Cruise Terminal from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So those of you that have been working and can't get to one of these clinics, you know, you get off at 3, you get off at 5, come see us at the cruise terminal. We'll have well over 1,200 vaccines to give. You know, usually we run out about 11:30 after we've given about 400. That's not the case on Monday. So
right.
Please come see us. Please take advantage of this. And let's get a little further down the road and get this pandemic behind us.
Yeah, and that late ending, I think, is important. There's just, I mean, there's probably folks that even fell within the previous guidelines, right, that wanted to get it, but the schedule didn't work out for them. I mean, this in the after work is a big deal.
Exactly. A lot of people doing shift work, a lot of the people that are doing, you know, that are first responders who just can't get here, you know, earlier in the day. This is a clinic for y'all. Please come down. You know, we will have the vaccine. Please come down. We will be there until 8.
Now, when people put, so they go to the cruise terminal, they pull, is it, do we need to know anything? Is there like pro tip from you, Dr. Chavers, or we just pull up, it's pretty obvious where we need to go, or?
Yeah, so we use the standard loading procedure for this when they load cruise ships. So you'll off water streets, you'll turn it into Eslada, and then you'll park in the parking deck. And then you'll walk in, or you'll take the elevator to the second floor. My biggest tip is please don't queue at 3 o'clock in the morning. You don't have to do that. if you'll, you know, let the early birds come through, get, but hey, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, further in the afternoon, it's just a nice, steady rhythm, and very often you'll drive in, park, walk in, and we'll have you out of there in an hour.
And you're telling us right now that the magnitude of increase in number of vaccination or physical vaccines you have there, that people don't need to panic. Am I putting words in your mouth, or, I mean, do you have enough to take care of folks?
We have enough to take care of folks on Monday.
Okay, so if
we are starting to see more and more vaccines become available. Alabama Department of Public Health recognized that we were poised to give a whole bunch of vaccines, and I think they said, you know what, let's see what you guys can do. So we're going to see if we can't break a single day record on Monday.
There you go. And you got the time to do it. So, y'all, that is coming up on Monday. And any forms or anything people have to have on their person when they show up to get the vaccine?
So this is a first dose vaccination. So if you're looking for that age eligibility criteria, bring your driver's license. If you're under that, fit an occupational criteria. Oh, by the way, the occupations did expand as well, which has been great. Now it's restaurant staff, construction, banking, IT, energy, legal, so a lot more people there. Hey, bring us proof of occupation. That can be your badge, or it can be pay stub, whatever. If you're there for underlying health conditions, we're not going to do a full medical inquiry of you in the parking lot. We're just not. Be honest with us. If you can wait to be vaccinated, if you don't have one of these underlying health conditions, you'll save somebody's life by saving vaccines. That's what we're asking for, is be open and honest on these underlying health conditions.
I'll translate for the doctor. Y'all act right. Just act right, and everything works out. Hey, this is good, and we're going to remind y'all again on Monday, talk about this, so there's no reason you didn't know it was going on Monday to go by and get your vaccine. Something you and I talked about on Tuesday, and I hadn't talked about it with you at all since then, but on Tuesday, we were talking about the underlying condition, one of them being pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
And you said that it's a recommendation for a pregnant woman to get the vaccination.
Yes, it is. And so what that came out
healthy
of,
mother, I mean, without underlying condition, but healthy, everything else is normal. They're pregnant. It's okay to get the vaccine.
It is. So with millions upon millions of pregnant women being vaccinated, or if they're breastfeeding, we're now getting data on that.
Well, that's what I was about to ask you. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just very, very good. Benefits far outweigh risk with these vaccines in pregnancy and lactation.
Right. So we just have like a minute left here. But since you and I talked, I remember we talked about it, and I saw a story. I know it's very preliminary. I don't know how much you've seen on this, but said two Palm Beach County, Florida pediatricians have shared the news that for the first known time, an infant has been born with COVID-19 antibodies to a vaccinated mother. This from AL.com, but I think they're reposting something from another source. Do you see this?
I have not. It's not unexpected.
That's
but
big.
We
if
don't
that's
have
true.
Enough data to determine what the durability and sustainability of that antibody transfer is.
Gotcha.
So part of the advantages of breastfeeding or having a mother fully vaccinated is that sometimes you get this transfer of immunity. But honestly, Sean, we don't know how well the baby's going to do. What we do know is, infants just are not high risk for COVID based on what data we're seeing with respect to infection. The big thing is, let's get mom and dad and the family vaccinated. Let's build a wall around that little baby, and we don't have to worry about it.
Well said. All right. Website, once again, for Mobile County Health Department?
nchdcares.com. You can go on there, check your eligibility. We've got a little little rubric you can put your information in to figure out if you're eligible. We'll also give you information on not only Monday. Tuesday, we're going to be at Bellingrath at 9 a.m. So we'll tell you about that and then some other upcoming clinics.
All right. We will talk to you on Monday. Best of luck. Dr. Chavers, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it.
Coming right back, hour number two.